I am Platt on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A new book looks at extreme poverty in Africa and the one person who a few years ago spearheaded an effort to end it. In The Idealist, Jeffrey Sachs and the Quest to End Poverty, the journalist Nina Monk looks at The Economist and his high-profile Millennium Villages project, a campaign that, with many millions, would remake communities in Africa and alleviate poverty. As declaimed in his best-selling 2005 book, The End of Poverty, Sachs is of the belief that if certain interventions are made, such as the building of schools and wells, introducing certain crops and mosquito nets, and vaccinations for people and livestock, among other things, then perhaps untold millions could be lifted out of poverty. In this book, Ms. Monk, who joins me now, went to Africa with Sachs, as well as on her own, and in this book she reports on what progress has been made, if any. She also looks at this figure, a brilliant economist surrounded by celebrity friends, whose idealism has shaped more than his image, but the lives of many already. Nina Monk is a contributing editor at Vanity Fair, who has written three other books, including Fools Rush In, which was the book on the AOL-Time Warner merger. This current book is published by Signal, which is an imprint of McClelland and Stewart. She lives in New York, but joins me from Toronto this day. Please welcome to the Platt on the Line program, Nina Monk. Ms. Monk, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Had you profiled Sachs in Vanity Fair before?
Yeah, this whole project began actually in 2006, initially as a profile for Vanity Fair. And I had been terribly interested in Jeff Sachs personally. I didn't know a whole lot about him at that time. I had read his best-selling book, The End of Poverty. The title struck me as a marvelous one and something that appealed to me as it had appealed to so many others. And so I began by writing what I at the time thought was going to be a fairly straightforward profile just of Jeffrey Sachs. And then after 6 months of doing that, it was published in Vanity Fair, whereupon I devoted the next 6 years to following him and his project, the result of which is this new book of mine called The Idealist.
And how many times did you go to Africa with him?
With Jeff Sachs, I would say maybe three or four times with Jeffrey Sachs, but countless other times on my own. What I set out to do with this book was not only to see the ways in which Jeffrey Sachs worked in the corridors of power, whether it was in Washington or London or the capital cities of Africa themselves, Nairobi, Kampala, and so on, not only to see what Jeffrey Sachs did to try to push for more foreign aid, to try to push through his ideas of how poverty can be ended, but to try to parallel that with the on-the-ground accounts of the people who were receiving this aid. And what I did was I immersed myself to the best of my abilities in the lives of people living in two villages in particular. And one of the villages is on the border of Somalia and Kenya. It's in an absolutely arid, godforsaken part of the world, and it's a place called Dertu. And the other village was in southwest Uganda, and it's called Ruhira. And so I did most of my reporting from those villages, to which I returned every few months again and again and again to follow the progress or lack of progress.
So the size of this, because, I mean, Jeff Sachs and the Millennium Villages Project, I mean, these are things that are hard to ignore if you read the papers and watch the news, et cetera. In terms of, it's something that, you know, I couldn't tell you. I mean, I could tell you a little bit about it having read your book, but most people couldn't. What's the size of this whole project, and what was involved in terms of how much money Sachs had, and sort of how many people it affected at the end of it.
Jeffrey Sachs, as you noted, is a brilliant and very well known and very accomplished macroeconomist. He had written this book in which he proposed to have the solution to poverty, and this project, known as the Millennium Villages Project, was intended to test his theories about ending poverty and to really demonstrate that his proposed series of interventions could be eventually used on a grand scale to eradicate extreme poverty by the year 2025. And he started out with $120 million of backing. Largely, or about half of that came from George Soros. And the idea was that with that funding, he would begin by implementing his theories in a dozen African villages, 10 different countries. And then, having proven that it could work in these remote villages, you know, as soon as this approach was validated, the idea was that it would be widely embraced by development experts, by the international aid donors, and by governments. And the result would be, in the ideal situation, billions of dollars in foreign aid dedicated to establishing this model all across the African continent. So at the beginning, we were talking about maybe 100,000 people or so who were affected by it, but the end goal was something much, much larger.
And so where are we in terms of now? I guess we're at the halfway point, aren't we? Between
I think we're probably more than that. Yeah. I mean, at this point, what happened is initially Jeffrey Sachs not only insisted that he had the solution to end poverty, but he took the rather outrageous, I think we can say in hindsight, claim that he could pull it off in 5 years. At some point along the way, he sort of quietly changed that 5-year timeline to a 10-year timeline. And so today we're around 7 years into what was originally a 5-year, now 10-year project. And I think that although there have been notable and numerous successes on the ground, village by village, I think that by any measure, it's quite clear that he has not managed to accomplish what he set out to do.
So what happened then? Was it his idealism that got in the way, or did he plan this poorly? What happened?
You know, Joe, I have to tell you that, you know, I don't pretend to be a development expert. I'm certainly not an economist. I'm a journalist, and my job and my profession is to really observe what is happening, to take copious notes, to listen to people as carefully as I possibly can. And my sense, above all, is that the expectations here were just too high. That when you have the audacity to title your book, as Jeffrey Sachs did, The End of Poverty, you've pretty well set yourself up for failure. And there is, to some degree, a terrible tragedy to that, because we can't possibly argue that there aren't positive results on the ground in isolated African villages when you invest $10 million or more. It's called charity, and that works, and it's good. And when it's done well, I am all for it. But charity is something very different than economic development. Economic development is about lifting up an entire nation and bringing them into the 21st century. And it may be, we hope that economic development is a solution or perhaps the solution to global poverty, but that's very different than charity. And what Jeffrey Sachs's project proved, what I saw happening on the ground again and again, was that people's lives were immensely improved. I saw at first hand the magnificent impact that these interventions had. You really can see in these villages a real reduction in malnutrition, for example. You can see fewer incidents of malaria. You can see more children in school. And you can see better hygiene. And that is remarkable. And those are important accomplishments, and they are not to be undermined. And but that isn't what we're trying to pull off. That isn't what needs to be done.
Now, I'm sure if you asked him whether this has been a success or not, he would say yes. And that's what's fascinating in terms of what you reveal in the book about who he is and what sort of how he is. He doesn't take criticism too well. And if you would bring something up, something critical, he would argue forcefully that you were wrong or just walk out of the room. I mean, is that part of the problem, too, in why this hasn't worked as well as it should have?
I think there's just absolutely no question about it. I think you hit on something very, very important. This is someone who, as far as I know, has never admitted any failure. And there is something terribly sad about that. And I don't think this is true only of Jeffrey Sachs, not by a long shot. I have spent most of my career writing about monomaniacal and very successful men. I say men because, in fact, they have all been men, as it happens. And it is quite unusual for men like this to admit failure. And when it comes to trying to end poverty in particular, I find it especially disturbing, because refusing to discuss the failures of this immense and important project, the Millennium Villages Project, may be good for Jeffrey Sachs and his career, but it is most certainly not in the best interest of the billion people on the planet who continue to live in extreme poverty. And Jeffrey Sachs, as the years went by and as I came to understand the topic more and more, and as I came to really see what was happening on the ground and the tremendous disconnect between what Jeffrey Sachs and his machine, I guess you could call it, out of New York, were insisting was happening in the villages versus what, in fact, was really happening, the reality on the ground, it struck me that this was perhaps not uncommon for, unfortunately, a great number of NGOs and nonprofits out there.
Well, what do you think it is that he doesn't understand about Africa?
I think Jeff Sachs knows a great deal about Africa. I think that part of the problem is that his understanding of the world is much more about theory, and it is all the things that people criticize academics for, quite frankly. It's a certain disconnect from reality and from individuals and from the way people react. And economists, as you know, like to believe, or many economists, I should say, like to believe that human beings act predictably, as if in a laboratory. But in fact, as behavioral economists realize increasingly, we very often do not behave predictably. And humans are prone to doing things that may seem counterintuitive and may, in fact, not even be in their best interest. And time and again, I saw in these African villages that Jeffrey Sachs's team would attempt to implement a solution that on paper, that in a laboratory, made perfect sense. But in fact, the people's response to it, the villagers' response to it, turned out not to have been predictable. And in the end, it was so much, it reminded me so much of that game that one plays as a child, called Whack-a-Mole, I think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you think you have tampered down or smacked down on one of the moles, and boom, six more pop up right before your eyes. And the complexity, the degree of complexity in Africa, in economic development, is enormous. And to simplify it, the way that Jeffrey Sachs does so well, you know, part of his genius is to reduce huge and complex issues to their essence. And all of us find that appealing. And all of us want to believe that complicated issues can be reduced to something very simple. But in fact, Africa is extraordinarily complicated. Poverty is extraordinarily complicated. And you know, it is not a laboratory. Africa's chaotic, and it is messy, and it is unpredictable.
Well, when you would go to Africa with him, and then when you would go on your own later, would you see things that see things differently in terms of you would see things that they wouldn't have shown you on your own about how things were run there?
I don't think I saw. I mean, I think one of the marvelous things about traveling with Jeffrey Sachs is I had access to places that on my own I probably wouldn't have, which means that in my book, for example, I have the marvelous opportunity to sit in on meetings with very senior World Bank officials, for example, with both the presidents of Tanzania and Uganda, as good fortune would have it, while they were having one-on-one private meetings with Jeffrey Sachs. And I report on those meetings and offer a real insight into the thinking and the kinds of discussions that go on between Western leaders in development and the leaders of these countries. But I would say that, in fact, my understanding of what was happening on the ground level and my ability to understand what was happening in the villages was much more easily accomplished without the presence of Jeffrey Sachs. Yeah. Jeffrey Sachs, what happens, and this is not just true of Jeffrey Sachs, this is true for many people, but what happens if you if you're a big shot, so to speak, coming in from the outside, is that everything is kind of played up. Your visit to a village is rather circus-like. Mm-hmm. And when these big men and women visit from the outside and come in the United Nations-issued vehicles with bulletproof glass and air conditioning on high, and they arrive, as Jeff Sachs so often did, in villages for just a few hours of a very well, highly choreographed visit, they don't really see anything at all. Everything has been planned ahead of time. Everything has been whitewashed. Everything has been cleaned up. And it reminded me sometimes of the preparation for the Beijing Olympics, which you might remember, where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, any number of slums were just bulldozed out of sight. And the Chinese government got all kinds of slave laborers to plant 1 million or more little flowers on the side of the road to beautify the city as the tourists entered for the Olympics. And it's not dissimilar to what happens when development, important officials from outside governments or development people of Jeff Sachs's stature come into small villages. The entire village puts on a show. And as a result, it's not necessarily Jeff Sachs's fault that he doesn't see what is happening. He may be wearing blinkers, yes, as I say in my book. He may choose not to see the failures on the ground. But it's also true that on some level it is simply impossible for people at his level to understand and to see what is happening, because it is hidden from their eyes as well.
If one reads your book, do you get a sense of what motivates Jeffrey Sachs and what motivated, say, his focus on Africa? I mean, was there something in his background, his upbringing, perhaps his idealism, that spurred all this on?
I have to say, everyone I've ever met who works in the business of aid, of development, they do really share an extraordinary degree of idealism, and I admire that tremendously. And I think without idealism, without deep compassion, we are not human. I think it's an important and essential characteristic, and it's one that Jeffrey Sachs certainly has. And shares deeply with other people committed to trying to end poverty. I saw it again and again. He was truly horrified. He was truly appalled by the conditions in Africa. He was disgusted by the growing gap in income levels between the rich world and the poor world. He feels it in every bone in his body that something needs to be done about this injustice and what really on so many levels is a question of human rights.
Is he a man of great ego? I mean, he's got a lot of celebrity friends around him, and you know, everyone considers him brilliant.
I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
No.
He is brilliant. He has a lot of celebrity friends, and he has an enormous ego. A colossal ego, absolutely. And he is someone who is deeply flawed. I think I show that quite clearly in my book. In many ways, one of my editors said to me when he read the first draft of this book, he said, "You know, Nina, I hadn't realized you were writing a kind of a Shakespearean tragedy." And I think on some levels he really hit the nail on the head with that, because this is a man who does set out and has set out to change the world in a noble and important way. And yet he has a terrible flaw, and he is flawed in a way that, unfortunately, it brings him down. And the ending, in so many ways, I think, is a tragic ending.
Does he still have the ear and, say, the money of the influential and the powerful?
I believe he does. I think that has subsided a great deal since his book, The End of Poverty, came out. This is still a man who, without doubt, can attract an enormous audience, has a great following. I think any TV producer would be delighted to have Jeffrey Sachs appear on his show tomorrow. The presidents of most countries, or certainly leaders of many countries, would be delighted to receive advice from Jeffrey Sachs. I do at the same time feel that quite clearly his influence has diminished, and that people have realized very plainly that, you know, he has had some serious failings, and he has badly tripped up, and he simply does not, in the end, have the solution to poverty.
Now, he would obviously disagree with that and with your book, I'm assuming. I mean, have you heard from him personally, or is it simply from that email that got passed to you?
Well, there have been, I think, pretty well every journalist, I expect you can expect the same, has come under tremendous attack after interviewing me and after airing my points of view. He is, as you mentioned earlier, a man with a very, very thin skin, a man who has never in his entire career accepted any degree of criticism without pouncing on it, and I feel, you know, he has bad-mouthed me, he has said all kinds of rather unkind things about me that I suppose should not have been unexpected, and yet have disappointed me, I guess is the word to use. They disappoint me because I think they are, to return to an earlier theme, I think they in so many ways are a reminder of the failings of far too many not-for-profits and far too many enterprises that aim to end poverty, and that is the refusal to deal properly with failure and responsibly with failure. And I think that if we hope to make any advances in terms of ending poverty, in terms of trying to end poverty, we need to really understand what doesn't work as much as what does work.
And I mentioned this email that you were passed. It's reported, I guess, on the Barron's website that, I guess, whatever he said about you, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think he expected when he brought you along, say, or gave you interviews? Did he think that he would get someone sympathetic or someone uncritical?
Well, I think I was and am deeply sympathetic. I'm also a professional journalist, and I would be rather surprised if Jeffrey Sachs didn't understand the inherent risks in allowing someone to follow your career for as many years as I had the good fortune to follow his. You know, many people have pointed out to me, and I think it's absolutely true, that my book in so many ways follows my own journey in understanding the depths of the complications trying to end poverty. And I begin the book, and I began this project, and in fact, my book proposal made clear that I began this project very hopefully. I, of course, and why wouldn't you want to believe that poverty can be ended? And when I started this project, I deeply believed in Jeffrey Sachs and deeply wanted to believe in the promises that he made. And as the time goes by and as the progression moves in my book, you can very much, along with me, I think, follow the change in my tone and the change in my outlook and the deep disillusionment that begins to set in.
Well, what's next for you? Are you working on another book now?
Oh, my. I feel like I just finished this one. It's been a very, very long journey and an exhausting journey, and I'm just beginning to start to wrap my mind around what I should do next. But if you have a good idea for me, let me know.
Well, it's made me want to go back and read some of your other stuff because, I mean, this book is just a fascinating read, and it's just a well-crafted book and a look at these important issues. Congratulations on it, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The book is called The Idealist, Jeffrey Sachs and the Quest to End Poverty. It's published by Signal, which is an imprint of McClelland & Stewart. Its author, Nina Monk, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.